Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Friday, January 15th, 2016. And with me today, I have my resident troublemakers again. Kelly Gumont, how are you?
I'm well, Jeff. How are you?
I'm doing really well. And it's actually hard for me to get through the introduction when I have you on the show, because I know you're having to do the thing where you actually physically cover your mouth when I do the introduction. And it's pretty funny. Also with me today, the other part of my resident troublemaker team, John Martellaro. How are you, John?
I'm good. I've been holding my breath for this very moment.
Haven't we all? Oh my. Okay. The first thing I wanted to talk about today, it's a piece that you wrote, John, and it has a bit of a macabre overtone, but it's also one of those things that any corporation really has to think about anyhow, so why shouldn't we speculate on what they're doing? And where I'm going with this, listeners, is John wrote a piece where he speculated on who Apple could have in line for succession should there be some tragic accident and Tim Cook is killed or dies.
I tried to make it as benign as possible. I said, if heaven forbid Tim Cook were hit by a bus, a euphemism in a friendliest possible way for saying there's some incident, you know, he could just have a minor operation, have to be out for a couple of weeks or something else. I have to go on travel with family business or something. So, who would take over?
Tim has to go on vacation for family business and then never comes back. It's like when you send your dog out to that farm in the country.
No. I'm just trying to be as circumspect and as friendly and as possible and neutral. You know, every company has to have a succession plan. When Steve Jobs was very ill, people started asking who the successor would be. And weird names came up, like Jonathan Ive, and from time to time, Phil Schiller, and maybe even Eddie Q. And the perspective I have is that people have to be sort of trained and honed first. They have to have some sort of outward sign that the company's putting trust in them. They have to have some sort of indication that they want this job because it's very stressful. And they have to have the leadership experience and the temperament for it. And so just because one of the Apple executives is your favorite guy and you like his hair,
yes.
Jeff just passed one of his toys in front of me on a display, which caused me to great pause, which is exactly what he intended. Because we do video behind the scenes here as we record the audio. And Jeff was trying to throw me off track here, which he did. So the discussion about who should be on the succession plan involves all those factors that I just mentioned. And I have noticed lately that a lot of those elements are appearing in the form of Jeff Williams. He's doing more interviews. He came on stage and talked about research kit. He's doing more public speaking. He's been promoted to the COO position, which is where Tim Cook was when he was second in command. And so there are these outward signs that Jeff Williams is being groomed for this position. Now, long term, you know, in 10 or 20 years, he may not be become the CEO. But right now, if I were to put somebody on the succession plan, based on who seems to want the job and seems who has the temperament, who's been trusted with delicate issues like discussing Apple and certain human rights and so on, I would say Jeff is the one who's been put forward as the guy who would be on that list.
All right. I find it really interesting that Jeff Williams would be at the top of your list. Not because I think that you are wrong, but because you have a very interesting insight into Apple. So why Jeff Williams over, say, Craig Federighi?
I think Craig is too intensely focused on software development as a leader in software engineering, and I have not been aware of his executive experience in terms of managing a company, in terms of managing a product, in terms of managing a software development team. I think he's very good, but I think he's still a little bit young and inexperienced to become the CEO of a company. Somebody who comes to mind and somebody who Brian Chaffin talked about yesterday was John Rubenstein, who was brilliant at engineering and leading an engineering team, but then when he became CEO of Palm, did not do as well. And that happens with a lot of leaders who are successful in the ecosphere of Apple and all the experience and other people and executives around them. But and you think they're great, and then they go off have a tough time running the show on their own. So Craig's not high on my list. The one I did, who most people would probably mention, and who I did not have space to discuss, was Phil Schiller.
I don't see Phil running the company, and that's not knocking his skills, his capabilities, or his experience.
Right.
It's just one of those things where I look at Phil and I think he can do so much more for Apple in the position that he already has. And I don't see him as the person that becomes the great leader where maybe Jeff Williams can be that. Tim Cook, I think, is a great leader. So is Steve Jobs.
You almost have to be of a military mentality. You have to tread the fine line between being very stern and creating a sense of tension and anxiety in people to bring out the best in them. But then you also have to be incredibly fair and expect the best of people. And you have to have a sort of a cast iron son of a gun temperament combined with a fatherly experience level, as a military general would. Mm-hmm. And you can see that all over Tim Cook, and you could see it in Steve Jobs. And don't see it so much in Mr. Schiller.
No, Phil Schiller seems to me to be a very valuable asset to Apple. And,
oh, yes.
And I think that Steve Jobs and Tim Cook both get how to best exploit Phil's skills.
Yes. And you have to want the job. And we don't know that Phil has really sought it.
So which is what I was going to say, is that I'm not even convinced that Phil Schiller is interested in getting the position, even if it were offered to him. And I think it's because of where he is. And of course, I'm totally making all this up, but it seems like he also recognizes that he's in the right place for Apple, and that to maximize his contribution, he needs to be where he is. And so that's where he is. And I feel like there's been a little bit of shuffling on Mahogany Row there. And hopefully some of that was with an eye to the future, because obviously they sort of don't want this to sneak up on them like it did with Steve Jobs, at least initially. And making sure that plan is in place. So, John, I really liked your outlook on this and the lines that you drew and the conclusion that they led you to. I thought that was very interesting. And I'm curious where things are going to go, because, you know, one thing a lot of people did was sort of knock Tim Cook when he took over, because particularly once he was officially permanent, it was really funny to watch a lot of more casual observers go, who's this guy and what's he doing there? And how did this guy get the gig? Because like when Steve was part of the company, you didn't see anyone but Steve when he ran things. So a lot of people didn't realize that Tim had already been there for like 15 years or something before.
Right. Oh, and had been running the company for about 3 before he officially became CEO.
Well, it didn't surprise me at all, because when Tim Cook took over, because I had seen that management technique where I had worked before at Lockheed Martin. I like to tell the story about a research project we had that was very visible and very big time. And they brought in this Greek fellow who was fiery and he was a cast iron son of a gun, and he was out getting money, and he was, you know, getting the building built and making decisions and working with the government and flying over the place, and he was just furious. actually working to bring this project to fruition, to get it started, get it rolling. And then once all that energy had been expended, then we went into the research phase. Here we are. People have been hired. Now work needs to be done. Mm-hmm. And they brought in a very intellectual, not a PhD, but a very academic, very calm, very friendly, sophisticated fellow who had the respect of the engineers instead of the angst. Mm-hmm. And then we got to work. And we spent years working under this fellow who was a calm, friendly, good leader. And then when the project finally wound down after I left, they brought in a guy who was ready for retirement to mop up operations, somebody who didn't really care too much, to mm-hmm. just sort of sit in place and kind of close down the project for a couple of years. So,
right. So they knew exactly the right leader to have for each phase.
That's the art and science of CEO leadership. So the transition from the fiery guy who puts Apple on the map to the leader who brings stability and long-term success was no surprise at all to me.
Right. But I think there was also, I mean, we see a lot more of the people, of people who aren't running the company now. Like, I mean, one of the things that you talked about was Jeff Williams giving more interviews and becoming a bit more public. And like we, you know,
and getting the COO job.
Right. Craig Federighi, Eddie Q, you know, none of the people, even, you know, barely Phil Schiller in the Steve era. We saw Phil once in a while, and it was only like if
throw him off a gantry.
Yeah. If Steve Jobs is dialing a phone, somebody needs to answer it, and we'll just get Phil to answer it. And so, you know, Phil pops up and he's like, "Hi, FaceTime is fantastic. See ya." And that was it.
Jeff was referring to Macworld New York 2000, where Phil Schiller had a iPad.
Original MacBook.
MacBook, sorry, in his lap.
Original iBook.
It was an orange iBook.
Yep.
Right. And he jumped off a one-story elevator.
Yeah, elevated platform laptops
to test the this accelerometer or something.
Yes, mm-hmm. And also to show us without us realizing yet that it was connected to a network wirelessly.
Right.
Right after that, then Steve Jobs was, by the way, airport.
It's still on the internet.
And that bed he landed on was not real big, too. He had to be fairly accurate. He looked a bit shaken afterwards.
I don't blame him.
Yeah. So, but my point was, like, part of what Tim has done with the company is make it at least feel a bit more open, a bit more public. Like, we see a little bit more of the people behind it. You know, the whole thing with, you know, Craig Federighi and Eddie Q and karaoke and, like, the whole thing with the secret handshake in the lab and whatever. Like, we never would have seen any of that under Steve. And so, it's been interesting to see the evolution in the direction, and I think it will be interesting when somebody ultimately replaces Tim Cook, how that continues. So I think it's interesting mostly because I can see people starting to have these kind of conversations. Now that he's been there a while, it sort of seems like maybe it's time for him to leave. People get bored really easily. It was interesting, and like I said, you know, casual observers had no idea who Tim Cook was, you know, when he started sort of sitting in the big seat. And so it will be interesting to see how familiar we are with the person who ultimately does take over by the time this is all said and done.
And the question is off on a tangent here is that does that person already work at Apple? Is it somebody in his or her 30s who's being groomed for the takeover in 15 years when Tim retires? Or do we not even think about that, and it would be somebody brought in from the outside, or somebody who's brought in 10 years, who spends 5 years there? We don't know. It's hard to predict that future.
Mm-hmm. Right. But for what we have right now, I'm with you. I think Jeff Williams is probably a really good choice for a successor.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Hey, we have another thing that I wanted to hit.
Before we do, enjoy this feeling of being right, John.
So I asked...
Which is something I get to do very often on this show.
Well, yeah. It's about to come to an end.
Right. So on Wednesday, we talked about Time Warner Entertainment and whether or not Apple should buy them and just take all of that content under their wing and have control over it. And I have been in the camp of, If it's up for sale, Apple should buy Time Warner Entertainment. John, you were with me. And mm-hmm. Kelly said, no, what Apple should do is invest in Time Warner. And part of the deal is that Apple would get access to all of the content that Time Warner Entertainment owns. Mm-hmm. And so we were kind of at a stalemate there because we could not reach a consensus amongst us. So we handed the decision off to you, all of our listeners. And guess what? You replied and you said Kelly was right.
Well, once I heard the price tag, I think I've changed my mind as well. I don't think I was aware of the price tag when we were talking about this issue on Wednesday, but at $112 billion, which is the number I heard, that's too much money for Apple to spend on cash.
Yeah, well, and it's also a lot higher than the offer that Time Warner was made, or that was made to Time Warner several months ago when mm-hmm. their stock value was markedly higher.
Yeah.
So I think that's a number that, if Time Warner put itself up on the auction block, would not be realistic.
No. Not at all.
No. But I did find it interesting that a lot of people just immediately jumped on Kelly's side and said, no, this isn't a purchase Apple needs to make. This is an investment they need to make.
Yay.
And, yeah. So thank you for settling that for us listeners, because clearly it's been keeping me up at night.
And, well, Kelly, you convinced me and I am now in your camp.
Yay.
Wow.
Where's the bell?
Doing.
Wow.
For me, it really, it's one of those things that doesn't make... Now, that doesn't mean that I've never said that Apple shouldn't buy another company, because I've been banging the Apple please buy TiVo drum since, like, 2008. Because I just thought that would have been a really great match. But I'm hopeful that if there is something that could happen, that it's something more like that, that Apple gets into the write a big fat check game and not just... buying them out, not just buying them outright.
Yeah.
For a bunch of reasons.
Well, okay, so we are almost out of time, but I still kind of want to stay in the camp of Apple buys Time Warner, but I have a very vested reason for this, and it's because I want it to happen and for there not to be a big public announcement, so when we all start calling Apple PR and say, did you buy Time Warner? All Apple says is Apple buys smaller companies from time to time, but does not disclose what they're going to do with it. And I just love the idea of Apple doing their blanket statement about smaller companies that they purchase from time to time. And it's actually Time Warner.
Time Warner. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I can see the appeal in that, I have to say.
Before we close, Jeff, would you care to reveal to the audience just exactly what Lego character it was you marched across the screen and had me giggling?
Well, actually, it's not a Lego character, but it's a Lego build of a character, and it's a Dalek. Mm-hmm. And it's one of the Daleks from the Lego Doctor Who TARDIS special edition kit.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So this is one reason why we do video while we record the audio, is to do things like this. Thank you, Jeff.
You're welcome. You're welcome. And with that, I think we're out of time. So, John, thank you for being here.
You're welcome.
And thank you for being a good sport. On the one day out of over 400 episodes where I decided to just prance something silly in front of the camera.
Kelly, besides yourself.
Besides myself. Kelly, thank you for being here.
Of course. I'm still back at Lego Dalek, to be honest. That's very exciting to me. So
yeah, well, there's more. You know, there's like Lego Weeping Angel and
mine aren't Lego. I'm kind of bummed now.
Yeah. Well, you know, it could happen, Kelly. Listeners, thank you for joining us and thank you for your feedback because it's always great to get your feedback. Also, giving Kelly some validation is totally fine by me. Woo-hoo. Yeah. So, yeah, thank you for being here. We will see everyone again on Monday.